I'm Jeff Cook.
And I'm TJ Wilson.
And this is Around the Circle.
I'm walking slowly. I'm taking my time. All I could talk in is starting to rhyme. I'm letting go, lonely, letting go of strife. I just can't get enough of this beautiful life.
The Enneagram is a map of the human personality. It's a tool for navigating relationships, creates language for what motivates us, and helps us look at the way we look at everything else. Most importantly, the Enneagram's a mirror because sometimes you need help seeing yourself. My name is Jeff Cook. I'm a philosopher in Greeley, Colorado, and with me is TJ Wilson, businessman, lover of theology, and Enneagram ninja.
Hello.
My man.
Hey, hey.
I was reminded of a deep cosmic truth today.
What's that?
That the worst thing in the world is being sick when you have a newborn. Now, I don't have a newborn, but I do have two attention-starved puppies.
Yeah.
And I've been sick, and it was more of a reminiscing of, oh yeah, I remember the days where of true pain.
sure. What this was like 17 years ago.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm recovering on the way up from a cold this week, and that's why we haven't posted in 2 weeks.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I would just like everyone to know that I was ready. I was ready to get on board and do my stuff. And Jeff had the audacity to cancel like 3 times this week.
I mean,
because of his quote unquote cold.
It's just a gross indecency right there.
Yeah.
Calling up your partner and telling him, I don't think I can go today.
Seriously. How dare you?
Who would ever do something like
how
that?
How dare you, sir?
Let the listener understand. Speaking of getting what we want, we have never done this. We have never jumped into this topic and just hit it and said, this is all the things you need to know about this topic. And it's arguably the most essential topic to Enneagram.
Yeah. It's thinking about that, like that we've never done just this topic. We have discussed it almost every other time.
Yep.
But apparently not all by itself.
Going to put all of our great thoughts in one place so you can send it to your pals.
There we go.
This is where the money's at.
Love it.
Stance is one of our tools. So we're doing this series on tools. Stance in theory is like the primary tool. It's the first tool.
Right.
We take the world in through our primary center, and then we engage the world through our stance. And stance is a complicated idea because there are so many elements to stance that are worth talking about. And just on my paper in front of us, I got 4 big ideas that we need to kind of discuss about what's going on here. But this is the first tool.
Yeah, and this can be the only tool that you use for a while as well. There's good wisdom that stance work is the type of work, like if you only ever wanted to do one thing, you could do stance work for the rest of your life because there's so much involved with what stance is and what the tool can do for you once you like begin to use it as a tool instead of just this thing that you're falling into and unaware of. So I'm excited.
Big idea for us, and we've said this in other podcasts, is that life is breathing. All life is this in and out process. You take in the world, you exhale back out into the world. And that works for us in our inner life as well. We take in the world through our center, through our primary center, and then we engage the world through our stance. And so in Enneagram language, stance is about how you get what you want. Your primary center tells you what you want, and stance is about getting what you want. And that's how TJ and I have defined this. I think that's original to us. The stance primarily, the big idea is just that. I am seeking to get the thing that my primary center says is going to make me happy. And there's all sorts of things we're saying about that process of getting what we want.
Right.
To jump into this then, that's the big idea. I want to do a little bit of history and then jump into just 4 big ideas about stance. And that's going to be our podcast today.
Great. Love it.
So Riso and Hudson, in their big book, Wisdom of the Enneagram, this is a book published in the 1990s. They come to an idea in the work of a Freudian scholar named Karen Horney. And she wants to talk about the ways that people attempt to solve their inner conflict. And she divides people into 3 types of people: those who move against other people, those who move toward other people, and those who move away from other people. And what Riso and Hudson do is they say this really overlaps well with Enneagram. And so they call Stance the Horney groups or the Hornevian groups or the Hornevian triads to begin. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like dipping their toe in, and they start swimming in those waters, and some really great stuff begins to kind of emerge from this initial study of Karen Horney.
Yeah, and a lot like, you know, a lot of Freudian scholarship, this has a lot to do with our relationship to our primary caregiver as a child, and whether we wanted to move away from them or wanted to be closer to them or wanted to move against them, like
Freud stuff,
scholar. So Freud stuff. But like the seeing the way that some of this Freudian ideas and a lot of general psychology concepts start to get bigger, and we start to see them encompass other things as well. Like the overlay here works out really nicely. And I think it, like, from Karen Horney into Riso and Hudson, it just keeps expanding and growing, and our understanding of what Stance is just kept getting bigger.
Yeah, that's right. Because so Horney is going to talk about inner conflict. What Riso and Hudson do is they move it outward. They say this is actually about our social style, is what mm-hmm. they call these. So they're not using the word stance yet. These are the three different types of social style, and they name them compliant, withdrawn, and assertive. Compliant types for Riso and Hudson are 1s, 2s, and 6s. Withdrawn types are 4s, 5s, and 9s. And assertive types are 3s, 7s, and 8s. And they have a fantastic little diagram in Wisdom of the Enneagram, in which they say this is, in this would be TJ and I's language, this is how these types are getting what they want. 1s, 2s, and 6s are earners. They earn the attention, stability, or autonomy that they want. Or withdrawn types, 4s, 5s, and 9s, they are going to withdraw to get the attention, security, or autonomy. They actually use the word security. Attention, security, and autonomy that they want. And then assertive types, 3s, 7s, and 8s, are going to demand the attention, security, and autonomy that they want. And they divide each of the types into those. Here's their primary desire. You know, heart types, 2s, 3s, and 4s, all want attention. 5s, 6s, and 7s, head types, all want security. 8s, 9s, and 1s, all want autonomy. And this is how they get it.
Yeah.
Really helpful.
Yeah.
And that's that one picture has been really instrumental for our work. And that's been a place to land. And then a lot of people have built off that. But any thoughts on Riso and Hudson?
Nothing to add there.
Wisdom of the Enneagram just lays the foundation for that time. Here's what's known. In my experience, just looking at the literature that's come out since, most of it has been a response to that book. Either parroting it, just saying it again in fantastic millennial profanity laden ways through Harper One. Or there's folks who are doing real work and they're actually interviewing folks and doing the study and trying to bring lots of life to the concept. TJ and I, as has often said, we end up really falling strongly in the Suzanne Stabile, you know, lineage, kind of build on a lot of her work. She embraces Stance as a primary. We parrot her all the time saying, you know what, if you want to do just one thing Enneagram-wise for the rest of your life, do Stance work.
Yeah, this is the one thing you could do.
She's going to redefine the terms. So she rejects, well, I don't know if she rejects, she doesn't use the word compliant for 1s, 2s, and 6s. She uses the word dependent. She keeps withdrawn, and then she also changes the word from assertive for 3s, 7s, and 8s to aggressives. These can be synonyms. There's nothing necessarily wrong or right with going with each of these terms. It really becomes like which of these terms is really doing the best to describe what's going on with these three types, and mm-hmm. that's where she lands.
Yeah.
So her latest book, Journey Toward Wholeness, goes into the centers and the stances. And it's a great study of these two things. You're taking in the world through your primary center. What does that look like? You're engaging the world through your stance. What does that look like? She really sits in those spaces, tells a lot of stories. Great little study if you want to jump into this topic. And I could keep going.
I'm mainly thinking about the things that she adds that become commonplace, but then moves us away from her as a topic.
I don't know if this is Stabile or if it's Horne who define stances based on what they're lacking. Mm. But this is part of, this is one of the topics that we're going to hit. This is often called your repressed center. And so ones, twos, and sixes are often described as thinking repressed. Fours, fives, and nines are often described as action repressed. And three, sevens, and eights are often described as feeling repressed. We're going to go through all of these here in a minute, but I know that that's something that she spends a lot of time on for these times.
Yeah, and it's if you haven't heard this before, this is really important. It's not that that center doesn't exist for these people. It's that it doesn't work the way it's supposed to, and you get into the space of unproductive behavior where if you are repressed in your body, it's not that you don't do stuff, it's that you do unproductive doing. You aren't doing the thing that needs to be done when it needs to be done. When talking about repressed in your thinking or your head center, it's not that you don't think. Everybody thinks all the time, but for ones, twos, and sixes, they struggle with unproductive thinking. And then similarly for feeling, everyone has feelings. We all experience our feelings and we all experience the feelings of others. But threes, sevens, and eights being repressed in that feeling center means that they don't have a good grasp on what those feelings are or what their importance is. It's unproductive feeling for these types.
I have a big hole in my bibliography here in terms of where orientation to time gets spoken of in literature, but it seems to me like as soon as I started learning about stance, people started pairing it with orientation to time. And for TJ and I, what we've done is talked about tools that we use and that there are some types that have present tools. It's like we're going to fix it. We're going to get this thing done right now with the tools that we have in hand in this moment. And there are some types that have more future-oriented tools. They're thinking about next Wednesday, next Friday, next Saturday. How am I going to get what I want in the future? And that's where their energy goes. Mm-hmm. And then there are some types that are past-oriented. They are using past-oriented tools, things they've collected, memories they have, the assets they are aware of to get what they want. And so orientation to time also plays into this. And so ones, twos, and sixes are present focused, have present focused tools. Three, sevens, and eights are future oriented tools. And fours, fives, and nines, withdrawn types, have those past oriented tools. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. But
yep.
Do you know where that comes from? I don't know.
I don't. I heard it first from Suzanne. So yeah. I'm not sure where she got it. This might have come out of her own study of it because she really has pushed hard into stance. And exploring and communicating stance and the importance of it to the masses. So.
As we've said in other podcasts, this is one of the best, like orientation and time, just as a footnote, is one of the best ways to understand people that you work with or, you know, people that you live with in terms of why are they doing what they do. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they're living yesterday or they're living tomorrow or they're just super focused right now.
Yep.
And just knowing that can be incredibly helpful.
Yep. Makes a huge difference.
Last little category is one that we just learned, and we've done a podcast recently on called Reference Points, and this is Joey Shuey's categories when talking about stance, and she wants to say that each of the types has a reference point. So they're trying to get what they want, but their focus goes a specific way. Ones, twos, and sixes, focus goes external. They're going to try and get what they want by really focusing heavily on the people in front of them. That would be, I mean, to use Karen Horne's words, this is the moving toward other people move. Mm-hmm. There are the internally focused types, which is fours, fives, and nines. These are the move away from people in Karen Horne's work, but for Joey Shuey, these are internally focused people. In order to get what they want, they're first going to go inward. And then there's three, sevens, and eights, who Shuey calls independent focused or independently referenced. And so they almost like step away, step out of the world in which they are and establish their foundation from that point so that they can get what they want.
Right. And if you haven't seen it yet, we are going to talk a lot about how these big ideas about stance sort of like interplay with each other. It's this dance, like the the way that the fact that threes, sevens, and eights are farthest from their feeling center is part of their independent reference and their future focus, and all of those things inform each other, et cetera, for all nine types. Like, this is stance is so interconnected with all of the different aspects of itself, and they all sort of like feed and challenge and grow each other.
This would be one of the places, I mean, this is a total footnote again, but Horne says that these are the move against other people.
Mm-hmm.
That can be true. And this is one of those places for three, sevens, and eights who object to the words assertive or aggressive. It finds itself in this idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that three, sevens, and eights as a whole, their reference point is independent, feels more all-inclusive.
Yeah.
There are some threes who don't move against other people. There are some eights that don't move against other people. Some of them do.
Right.
Some of them will step on you in order to get to the thing that they want.
Mm-hmm.
But not all three, sevens, and eights do that.
Right. Right.
And so I have really appreciated Shuey's verbiage here because it's a wider, better description.
Especially for all those threes who don't like being called aggressive.
Or, so, I mean, some eights and some sevens, I imagine.
Sure. And the move toward types, some of them don't like some of their language. I would like to acknowledge that withdrawn works for all of the scholars,
yep,
for all of the type. Like, withdrawn is a great word to describe my people. Fours, fives, and nines. Woo!
I mean, we should talk about that for a second. The fours, fives, and nines across the board, withdrawn just works,
yep,
and you're internally referenced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
When it comes to your and I's work, as has often been said on this podcast, I really have an aversion to compliant and dependent. I think that can work for some. I really don't think it works for ones, and it may not work for some twos and sixes. My preference is reactive to describe the category of ones, twos, and sixes. Joey Shuey has said that she likes responsive.
Mm-hmm.
Both those terms, I think, are much better and more informed, more inclusive. Again, kind of wider arms that really capture the whole of what's going on,
right,
with ones, twos, and sixes. And it makes sense because ones, twos, and sixes have an external reference point, they are reacting to that reference point. They are responsive, right, to that reference point. They're not always dependent on that reference point. So many will want to say ones, for example, are, you know, dependent on their superego or compliant with their superego. Well, that's not external. That's internal.
Right.
And that,
right,
wouldn't necessarily work. Some ones will be compliant and dependent on other people because they think it's the right thing to do, but not all.
Yeah.
So too, as we were just saying with three, sevens, and eights, assertive, aggressive. I particularly have liked the idea of independent being the best, yeah, word for this stance.
It's a bigger boat.
Because it's a bigger boat.
Yeah.
But I sometimes assertive really can capture what's going on with all three, mm-hmm, types.
Yep.
So I think for in terms of our work, that's kind of where we're landing. Reactive, withdrawn, independent, with those other synonyms floating in to mix things up, make it spicy.
Right. Keep everybody on their toes.
Keep it. Just know, let everybody know, we read the literature. We did the homework before we came to class. But this is where we land. With that in mind, we're going to jump into those three big categories of repressed center, orientation to time, and reference point. This is really what captures stance. And again, stance is getting what we want. So with this overly long introduction, that's so new for you and I to have a 20-minute introduction. Normally, it's got to be, what, two or three, and we're just
only have a 20-minute introduction? Is that what you meant to say?
It's only
a 20-minute?
There have been times where I've looked up, and I'm like, we are on minute 40, and I just got done with the intro.
Sometimes there's a lot of groundwork that has to be laid.
For those of you who keep coming back, I appreciate it. By the way, for those of you who know this about us and don't like the intros, you're welcome to skip. This is what I do with a handful of my podcasts. I'm like, these guys ramble on for 15 minutes every time, and then they jump into the thing I care about.
Yeah, it happens.
All right. So, well, let's talk about orientation and time, because I think this is going to pair well with those titles, mm-hmm, for each of the types. We can jump into these. One thing that has hit me recently is that our primary center defines our problem and our stance defines our primary tool for addressing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem emerges in our primary center. For heart types, the problem is shame. For head types, the problem is fear. And for body types, the problem is anger. And we feel that problem.
Right.
And it needs to be addressed. And commonly, the first thing that we pull out is the most comfortable tool we have, the most handy, the one that we seem to wield with some power, and it's our stance.
Mm-hmm.
And that tool orients itself toward the future, toward the past, or toward the present. And that always just strikes me as really helpful. Like, how are you going to deal with your shame? Well, the three is going to win Wednesday.
Right.
Next Wednesday is coming, and I'm going to dominate on Wednesday. And the thing about the three, they know what it's like not to win. They have memories of not, you know, shame is a past-oriented emotion.
Mm-hmm.
They know what it's like not to win. And that's going to fuel them in terms of saying, next Wednesday, I'm going to win. And that's why they're future-oriented.
Yeah. Here's the things that are coming, and I am preparing for to excel at everything on my calendar. And I'm going to keep expanding my calendar as we go to make sure that I'm ready for the next thing. Like, there's this always planning next week kind of thing, because there's always something to do. You always have to keep doing stuff in order to always be successful. And so you're always looking toward the future.
Sticking with future-oriented types, sevens don't feel shame in that way. I'm not sure sevens feel shame, do they?
A lot of them don't. Shame isn't a thing for them.
Sevens actually do fear being stuck,
mm-hmm.
being grabbed hold of, getting in a spot where they can't escape some of the darker emotions they have.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get out of that?
Right.
They likewise have future-oriented tools.
Yep. You make a plan. That's how you get out of it. You make sure there's always an escape route.
Keeping your options open, baby.
You know where the exits are, and you know how to get there. And it's easier to have a plan for tomorrow than to get stuck in today, because even if you are stuck somewhere, you can still think about tomorrow.
The head type really emerges when you say it that way.
Yep.
Of sevens who are able to really live in their minds. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can...
For a lot of sevens, there is, once they start really doing this work, they realize that the anticipation of the thing that they're planning is usually more enjoyable than the actual thing.
Right.
Like, the prep work and, like, the planning of the fun is better than the actual event.
For eights, the world is coming at you and it wants to hurt you. And you may feel vulnerable right now knowing this. And so the preparation for, I'm going to ensure that next Wednesday I am protective, have all of my stuff under control, under wraps. I've built the thing that ensures that I won't, you know, my gates won't fall in,
mm-hmm.
is the way that eights get the agency that they desire.
Right. And if you aren't prepared for the things that could make you vulnerable or take advantage of your vulnerabilities, then you're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, looking at the horizon for the things that might be coming, this is part of how eights operate. There's always something to do, and there's always something to do in preparation for tomorrow.
Yep.
Because if we just wait till tomorrow comes, then we may not have control over tomorrow anymore. So let's get ready for it now.
This can play out. I'm thinking of high school students now, just off the top of my head, but this could play out as a high schooler who figures out ways to ensure that they can stay in the room all day long with two middle fingers up to anyone who tells them to get out of the room and go do something else.
Sure. Yeah.
This also can materialize in the high schooler who takes off at 5 a.m. with two middle fingers up and says, I'll see you maybe at 2 a.m. tonight.
Yeah.
And it's coming out of the same spot of they have a radar for what's going to make them feel vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
what's going to upset their agency,
yeah.
and their sense of self-control.
Yep.
And they will posture themselves in such a way to, you know, future plan, here's how I'm going to ensure that I'm not going to be in those spaces.
Right. And even thinking about all of the stuff that we have to do now, stop talking about the stuff that we have to do now and just do it so that we can get it over with, because we're focused on the future.
Yeah. Yep. Another illustration of this might be, I've one of the folks that we speak to on when we meet monthly on Zoom talks about entering a room for a presentation, a big room for a presentation. It's very common for eights to sit near the back, mostly because they don't know what's coming up in the future.
Right.
And so preparation means I'm going to pick seats where it's easier for me to exit if I need, if I desire.
To ensure that I maintain control.
Hear that frequently.
Yep.
Future problem solvers. Those who use past-oriented tools are going to be fours, fives, and nines. And you'll notice how much different it is, the tools they're employing. Mm-hmm. It's the same problem, shame, anger, and fear, but it's different tools. So we can talk about nines to start.
Great.
Nines taking the world through the present, and present anger emerges because the world is always trying to upset our sense of control, make us feel uncomfortable.
Mess things up.
Nines are going to use past tools to address their present anger. How does that look for you?
Yeah, you know what works when you've already done what works before. And that sort of sense of like just dealing with what comes as it comes, like it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine because it always has been fine. And we got through all of that stuff and we're going to get through this. And we want the world to be harmonious, but we need to understand how that harmony works. So we have to draw on the experience. So like I have to go into a space before I'm like working in that space because I need to experience the space in front of me. Like I can't imagine how things will go based on a diagram or some photos. Like I can't future plan like that. But once I'm in the space, I can plan for what I know works and where and how. And like it's always drawing on my past experiences to say, this is what is going to maintain peace and harmony in front of me.
For nines in particular, this also means physical items that they collect that have history.
Yep.
As has often been said, my mom was nine and she was a historian of medieval Renaissance furniture.
Sure.
Like the surrounds herself with these items. These have history. Mm-hmm. They have depth. They have a certain texture and quality to them that has lasted. Mm-hmm. And just that posture of this is what she wanted to study says everything about her inner life in terms of how she did everything else. What is it? What are the things around me that will make me feel comfortable? That's her body type coming out and it's pulling from the past.
Yeah. And just as a like very concrete example, I can't purchase something that I have to actually physically interact with, like vehicles.
Yeah.
Thinking about buying a new vehicle, I have to have sat in that vehicle for a long time before I know whether or not it'll be comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. Because it has to be behind me. The information has to be something that I'm drawing from to know whether or not it's going to work in the future.
Right. And once you discover that it works, it's very hard to separate yourself from it.
Correct. Because it has always worked.
Different for fours and fives. Fours aren't trying to repel anger. They're trying to repel shame. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use past tools to get it. How is it that they're using the past?
Well, so I've put forth this theory before, and I'm going to do it again. I think there's a type in each center, in each stance that isn't actually trying to get rid of their primary feeling.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think fours are not averse to their shame. I don't think that they are trying to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And that is actually part of this, because getting rid of their shame is saying that that is not part of who they are, and it is part of who they are because it happened. And they want to be authentic, they want to be true to what they're experiencing, and they have to draw on their past experiences to know what those feelings are. All of the feelings are behind them, and they are trying to understand and be fully in the feelings that they're having.
When fours feel that they have a fundamental flaw, this is common for fours. You don't think that they're trying to get rid of that flaw?
I don't think they're trying to get rid of that flaw. I think they're trying to figure out how the world can make space for them, given that they have this flaw. This is the flaw that keeps them out of certain circles.
This would be the is this not the move then in terms of using past tools is you try and romanticize the flaw, or you're trying to bring some beauty to it. So I'm thinking of like what the Hunchback of Notre Dame story, mm-hmm. like yeah. in theory, you could see someone saying, well, this person is, you know, has some flaw, but what the story does is shows just how beautiful and worthy and part of the architecture.
Right.
This actually is.
Right. And not just that, but also like his flaw is external, whereas the actual monster in the story is looks exactly like a priest should look.
Right. 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 Yeah. That's a good way to put that. To push into the past orientedness then of engaging those things. It's still wrestling with shame in a way.
It is wrestling with it, but not in a way to try and get rid of it.
Correct.
It's trying to figure out where this shame puts me in place.
Yeah, so like another type, like eights will wrestle with anger, mm-hmm. but they won't necessarily try to get rid of their anger in the same way. Fours understand the shame that's there as their underlying feeling.
Yeah.
Their response is not to alleviate it.
Right.
And so, but the move...
That's my theory.
But the move is a past-oriented move.
Yes. Yeah, it's still acknowledging the shame from the past and wrapping our minds around our past, like using those past experiences to inform how I feel about the things that are happening in front of me.
Yes.
Like it's all still drawing on everything that I have been and gone through.
Does that not lessen the shame at some level if you can reconceptualize all these things?
Don't tell any fours that, but yes. Processing the shame is part of how you lessen it, and that's what they're doing. They're not trying to lessen it; they're trying to experience it fully
yeah.
and let it live where it is supposed to be.
I do like that. Still, as a theory, the six is for the mm-hmm. fear types, right? So all these, yep. the just as a total footnote, four, sixes, and eights constitute a triad. They're the emotional response triad,
right.
And so in some ways, when they are solving problems, they might be pushing into those emotions
right.
hard in order to solve the problems, because those right. are tools for solving problems at that point.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. And they're not something to be discarded. It's something to use to help solve the problems.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Has value. Last one here is fives. How fives use past resources to solve their fear.
Yeah, and this is drawing on information, experience, data collection, ensuring that I have gotten enough resources in the past to be able to help me move forward. And this is a great place to sort of insert an idea for all three of these types. It's the movement forward doesn't necessarily happen. We are spending our time in the past in order to prep for getting ready to move forward, but we're not necessarily actually moving forward.
Right.
So fives are gathering their resources and prepping and like making sure they understand all of the dance moves before they get on the dance floor. But they may not actually get on the dance floor, because there's always more dance moves to learn. There's always something more to draw in from that past, from the knowledge of everyone who has gone before, from the collection of like Scrooge just collecting money. Like there's different resources that we're gathering to protect, that fives are gathering to protect themselves, and it's all drawing from this past experience. Somebody who grew up poor might hoard money for their entire life in order to make sure that they never are poor again.
Part of, and we'll jump to this, but that's a great bridge to action repression right there.
Mm-hmm.
As if you're always living in the past, it may be hard getting into your body.
Right.
So too, if you're always living in the future, it might be hard to feel what you're feeling right now, because there are no feelings in the future.
Right.
And if you're always in the present moment, you can't know what to think about the present moment, because nothing's happened. It's right. It's presently happening. I haven't had yeah. time to think about this. There you go.
You don't process it, because it's already in the middle of happening.
That's how the repressed centers work. Last one is ones, twos, and sixes. So the reactive types are going to be present oriented in their tools. So one of the most helpful terms here is from Riso and Hudson. They just say these types are earners. Mm-hmm. So with Joey Shuey's reference points, these are an externally referenced type. They're going to earn what they want, and that's going to overcome the shame, anger, and fear that they feel. So start. I think twos are the easiest to see here. Twos have felt like others didn't want them in the past. It produces a sense of shame in them. And so how are they going to get the wantedness that they desire, the attention they desire? They're going to earn it.
Right. And they're going to react, respond to whatever's happening in front of them. It's always a movement toward the other person. It's situationally dependent, and like the focus is on what needs to be done now. What task can be done to make people love me? How do I ingratiate this person to make sure they don't reject me? I have been rejected. I have been not wanted in the past, but now there are things that I can do to make sure people want me around, and I'm going to keep doing those things.
Sixes, going to struggle with fear. Going to take in the world through their head center, and their head center is a analytic center that is thinking about what might happen in the future. It's going to produce fear in them, but they're going to react to that fear in the present moment. What do you see there?
Yeah, where like we talked about fives gathering their resources, sixes are more actively maintaining their resources. Like there's always something to be done now to make sure I keep the security that I have tried to obtain, and like I need to make sure that I am actively maintaining my place in the group or the hierarchy or whatever, so that they don't kick me out, so that I don't lose the security I have. And so it's always a focus on what am I not doing right now that I should be doing, or like in that way, it's this present focus on the things that need to be done right now.
Yeah, just as a footnote to insert, sixes are going to process with emotion. And so this often becomes very tribal, mm-hmm. in terms of thinking about resources.
Right.
It becomes very much who's around me,
right.
who's going to help protect me from future catastrophe.
Right.
I'm going to make sure that I earn their favor here.
Mm-hmm.
I should have said that with threes and nines as well. Threes are going to process with action. And so what do I need to do next Wednesday is the question for threes.
Right.
And for nines, they're going to process with thinking. And so it's, you know, what are the resources I have at hand to ensure that mm-hmm. I maintain the calm that I desire,
yeah.
against all these things that might want to push me around?
And objectively, like, what is harmony in this situation?
Yeah.
Because harmony is not always stillness,
mm-hmm.
but you have to understand what the situation is in order to know whether or not something is going to be harmonious.
Yeah. I almost skipped ones. Lastly, ones are going to take in the world through the present and respond in the present. This is a bang, yep. bang kind of operation there, yep. apparently, for ones.
Yeah, there's always things that need to be fixed. There's always things that can be improved. There's always things that can be moved a little bit farther along the line into becoming what it's supposed to be. The arc of the universe is forward movement and improvement and all of that. And there is always something that needs to be moved from here to there. And so ones are always focused on the thing that needs to be improved. And this is how they maintain their own autonomy, is so long as I've done all of the things that I am supposed to do, then I get to keep control over myself.
Twofold things here. To circle back to what TJ was saying earlier about nines and trying out new cars.
Mm-hmm.
The nine may need to sit in the car for a while to get a sense of it, feel for it, and the rest. Ones will be a little bit quicker in the sense that they'll sit in the car and say, this is the car for me, I feel it.
Right.
Or they'll sit in the car and say, I don't think this is the car for me, but I couldn't tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
But the feelings are there. The intuitions are there.
Yeah.
We haven't brought up that word yet.
Yeah.
A secondary side to this is that the rightness, wrongness, perfecting side of ones and their earnerness can come again out of how they feel. They're taking in the world through their intuitive center, through their body center. And they want their body to feel good, not corrupted, not spoiled, not like no infections.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, the common cold is just a pain in the ass.
This is obviously about something that you did wrong, some type of moral failure.
If I had done a better job with my diet, my exercise, my sleep mm-hmm. regimen,
If you were just taking better care of your body, then you probably wouldn't have gotten sick.
If I had read the Bible more, I wouldn't have. That's how this works. But that is the processing. The earning comes out in that, those forms. Like, what do I do to ensure that my body feels well in the world? And then I will get the control that I want. Because I'm clearly not in control now. I got to, you know, sit in bed for a while and rest up.
Right.
Feel better.
I have to tend to all of these things that need to be fixed before I can go back to doing what I want to do.
Yeah. That same mindset spills out into everything. Here's your work life. Here's your romantic life.
Right.
You know, here's your personal life. Bang. Orientation and time.
Yep.
That's a good picture, I think. Again, what are your problems? What are the tools you have to solve them? Both of those have an orientation and time, but stance really focuses on past, future, and present-oriented tools.
Yeah.
Friends, we're going to pick up this podcast next time with underlying feeling and reference points. If you're into our work, do share this with a friend. It's the best possible thing that you can do for us. Or if you have friends who have not yet gotten into Enneagram, do share our Start Here podcast, which is linked in the notes. Very easy to find. Just look for Start Here Enneagram and it'll pop up. If you get into movies, we have another podcast called Movie Typing, where we go through famous movies and the Enneagram types of characters there. Good stuff there. I'm always really proud of the work that we do there. And lastly, we always appreciate stars and reviews and subscriptions. So for TJ Wilson, my name is Jeff Cook. May all good things be yours.